In Living Color, written by Della 19, read by the Group of One. This is a Kingsman Secret Service fandom fanfic, rated G, with the pairing of Harry Hart, Gary Eggsy Unwin. Additional tags for Soulmate AU, Fix It, and Companion Piece. Part 2 of the Rainbow Connection series. Summary. Color, Arthur tells him once, an eyebrow raised warningly over a sniffer of brandy, is distracting. And the Harry who is 21 only nods and takes a sip of the gray brandy in his hand. He intends to be a Kingsman until it kills him. He cannot imagine color will be a problem he will have to face. And then, years later, Harry is 40, and he knows that blood is red, and somewhere in London there is a 15-year-old boy with very blue eyes. Yes, he thinks, burying those thoughts deep, deep away where it belongs. He finally knows what Arthur meant. Color is distracting. Harry's point of view for My Soulmate Color AU, prompted on Tumblr by Nikki Ari. Don't think of color as a little thing. Think of it as one of the greatest we know, and rejoice in it. Train yourself to see it everywhere, to know its perfect harmonies and splendid contrasts, its delicate gradations, its depth and power. A deal of our happiness comes through color, and much more can come if we will let it. Hildegard Hawthorne, The Fun and Immensity of Little Things, St. Nicholas, Volume 48. Harry is 21 when he joins the Kingsmen, and his world is quite gray. This, he finds, is rather par the course for a Kingsman. Color is a boon in the spy game, but soulmates, attachments, are not. And so the Kingsman knights see in gray, and manage themselves accordingly. Color, Arthur tells him once, an eyebrow raised warningly over a sniffer of brandy, is distracting. Arthur, Harry will learn years later, lost a soulmate 6 months after meeting her. A mugging gone wrong when she was coming to meet Arthur for dinner. And for a few pounds and a twitchy trigger finger, Arthur lives a life of grays once again. The mugger, apparently, was a street thug, stealing because it was that, or starve. With hindsight, this knowledge will be particularly clear. But the Harry who is 21 and has a gray dog named Mr. Pickles knows none of this. That Harry only nods and takes a sip of the gray brandy in his hand. He intends to be a Kingsman until it kills him. He cannot imagine colors will be a problem he will have to face. Blue. It is the first color that Harry sees, and he remembers it even as he is hit by a kaleidoscope of color in the apartment of his dead protege's family. And yet thankfully he still speaks, even as he reels, oversensitive and overwhelmed by all these familiar things made foreign with the addition of color. His soulmate is in this room. Not the widow, crying and angry. Harry knows, and he cannot even be grateful for this, because instead it's the boy, shaking his toy and looking up at Harry with those blue eyes. Harry suddenly feels ill. The woman throws the medal and is off her back at him. And although Harry would give anything to not even have to look at the boy, he owes the memory of his father at least this. And so Harry crouches down, looks into eyes oh so very blue, and manages to give the medal with its pink and purple ribbon over, manages to make his offer. And then he flees. It is, Harry knows, not an unheard of thing. It is not even an uncommon thing. In a world populated by billions of people, there is naturally some variance in the age of soulmates. No one can guarantee to meet their other half when they are both of an appropriate age. It is just fate, luck, the roll of a dice. And yet, no matter what he tells himself, Harry's hands shake as they try to flip the record of Lee Unwin, the almost Lancelot, in their dark green folder. 7, Harry reads, staring at the notes made of one Gary Eggsy Unwin. 7. Harry turns 32 next month. Vomit, Harry learns, is a truly revolting yellow. In the end, he pushes the file away and banishes the thought from his mind, locks it deep down away in him, and there it will stay. Harry cannot pick a soulmate, but he can pick what he does with that knowledge. And so Harry, who has based his entire ideals on that of the nobility of a gentleman, chooses nothing. Eggsy will grow and become a man, become his own person independent of Harry, of his influence, of his eyes, of his very thoughts. Harry will permit no other possibility. And if, someday many years from now, that man decides he wants anything to do with Harry, then he will be free to contact him, on his own terms, of his own free will. He has his number. And yet, for all his resolve, life complicates after. Harry learns that Merlin wears tan leather jackets, Lancelot prefers blue ties, Mr. Pickle's fur is a mixture of dark brown and black, that Harry himself has brown eyes, that he inherited them and his chestnut brown hair from his mother. Blood, Harry learns, spilling forth from a wound he has inflicted, is red, red, red. Harry does not stop, does not let it make him less of a Kingsman, learns to conceal it away with all the other dark, forbidding things. But he cannot say he ever comes to like red. Sometimes, he does not hide it well enough. "Are you quite all right, Galahad?" Arthur asks him once, a week after Harry returns from a mission where he'd had to avert his gaze from the carnage wrecked by their target. Innocent people laying dead-eyed everywhere, oh so red, reining in an armchair by the fire, and Harry knows that his eyes are green and oh so shrewd. Kingsmen, after all, do not see in color. It is messy, and Harry knows how much Arthur values the simplicity of order, of gray. "Quite, Arthur," Harry says, voice level, perfectly calm, taking a sip of his amber brandy in his glass. And Arthur nods, apparently satisfied, and frees him of that piercing green gaze. Harry is 40, and he knows that blood is red, and that somewhere in London there is a 15-year-old boy with very blue eyes. Yes, he thinks, bearing that thought back deep, deep away where it belongs. He finally knows what Arthur meant. Color is distracting. 2 years later, Harry met Beth, an innkeeper who lives in a little village full of green trees. Beth has gold hair and blue eyes, and her smile is kind when she compliments the brown of his eyes. Beth, he learns later over a lovely dinner, was a lawyer at a prestigious firm in the city, and it was there that she first laid eyes on her soulmate at a company party, another litigator at the firm, and his lovely soulmate wife. "I felt like an ambulance chaser, like some monster waiting there and hoping for something horrible to happen," Beth confides to him once, golden hair splayed out on his bare chest. "So I had to get out, get away from that feeling." And then, with a lazy gesture to both of them, and to the inn around them, with a sad little smile, "So this is me, getting out." And this Harry understands. Completely, because he too does not let himself think of him. Of the boy out there with those blue eyes, 17 this year. Because if he did, if he looked, Harry fears he might be tempted by the beauty of youth, still not a man. If he looks, Harry fears he might want. And so Harry does not look, does not think. Harry will not allow himself to be made a monster by a quirk of fate. Eggsy has his number. One day he will contact him, or he will not. 10 years on, in a world with color, and Harry continues to refuse to let it be any other way. He and Beth part ways a year or so later, and it is an amicable thing. A few years later, he learns that her soulmate is now a widow, and that she has returned to the city, chasing the hope of that better tomorrow. "Oxford's not Brogues?" a voice says, on the recording Harry is given. Male, no longer with the timbre of a child, but remembered. no matter how much Harry pushes it away. And Harry thinks of Blue as his heart skips a beat. Harry wishes her all the best of luck. It is a man who exits the police station, Harry's impossibly relieved to find. Bewildered beneath his upturned navy blue hat. A young man, to be sure, with quite the chip on his shoulder, but a man nonetheless who follows him without complaint, sits and talks with him over a pint of Guinness, as pleasant a first date as Harry has had in a while. And then there are the ruffians that interrupt them, and, well... When Harry sits back down, he is rather aware that he is quite guilty of showing off, wanting nothing more than those blue eyes to continue to look at him with some measure of what is perhaps awe. Harry rather thinks he might be in a bit of trouble. Igsy punches through the glass, aces his tests, and sneaks his little coffee-colored pug scraps from the table. And one night Harry wakes from his bed in the medical ward to see Igsy slumped at his side, face half-smushed adorably into the side of the slumbering pup. Harry contemplates getting out the amnesia darts and just self-injecting away. Merlin smirks at him when he finds them, black eyebrows raised to almost dangerous levels, and Harry cannot even bring himself to care. If there was a war, Harry knows he has already lost. That does not mean, of course, that he stops fighting. Harry offers to get Eggsy a suit, ostensibly as a reward for his success in training, and ignoring powerfully his secondary motive of the desire to see Eggsy in a proper Kingsman suit as Eggsy steps into the shop, all the while looking at him like he hung the moon. And Harry nearly loses his mind, and quips about popping one's cherry, and then desperately tries to cover up his momentary insanity with a lesson in shoes, and the peel of golden hand grenade lighters. Igsy's cheeks, when he blushes, are a too appealing shade of pink. He thinks it is perhaps only Valentine's appearance, the glaring white of his awful hat clashing dreadfully with the pinstripe black of his tails, that stops him from pushing Igsy into dressing room one, and ruining all his hard work and resolve. Harry has never been so glad to run into a megalomaniacal psychopath before in his life. "Not until he's a Kingsman," becomes Harry's mantra. Not until he is a Kingsman, he thinks, staring at Eggsy's arse in his training gear. Not until he's a Kingsman, Harry reminds himself, untying Eggsy from the tracks, heart filled with pride and body oh so close to Eggsy's. Not until he's a Kingsman, Harry thinks, as he sips the martini that Eggsy has made for him, sitting in the comfort of his home and staring at the oh so tempting sight of Eggsy, happy and comfortable here with him. Not until they are equals. Harry cannot turn back the hands of time, offer himself up young again, but he can offer this, the Kingsman, as equality, and Harry will allow himself to accept nothing less. Eggsy's lips are pink as he sips his drink, and his eyes twinkle blue, and Harry thinks, not until he is a Kingsman, and bites his cheek until he tastes blood. And then Igsy doesn't shoot the dog, and that mantra, that dream, crumbles. And Harry is terribly cruel in his disappointment, and it isn't until he's on the plane that Harry truly realizes his mistake. Igsy didn't shoot the dog because it is repugnant to him to consider harming what he loves, and Harry, in his carelessness, has committed just that very sin. Sitting in that awful church in Kentucky, listening to only hatred, Harry promises that as soon as he gets back, he will right his wrong and tell Eggsy what he truly means to him. And then the gun in his hand is black, and Harry has no room for thoughts of love in his mind. Valentine's mind control is red, 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 all blood and rage and hate, and Harry watches himself do terrible things, wants to do those things, his emotions, his thoughts no longer his own. He is hardly even himself after the bloodlust has passed, and he is staggered from the church, the sole survivor, when he sees Valentine, the woman with her deadly silver legs, and Valentine's men, and Harry knows he is dead. And so, with his last breath, he thinks of Eggsy, of wasted time, of regret, and of that gray he has condemned Eggsy to. And then Valentine fires, and there is only blackness. When Harry wakes, when he was sure he never would again, the first thing he sees is that oh-so-cherished shade of blue. And so Harry lets his truth finally free after 17 years of suppressing it. And when Eggsy's response is to offer his hand to him, palm up and blue eyes soft with emotion, Harry knows he has been given a second chance. He curls his fingers into Eggsy's and promises he will not waste it. And so, in a Kentucky hospital, Harry sits with his soulmate and watches as the oranges and yellows of the sunrise play off the contours of Eggsy's face as they mark the first day of the rest of their lives. He can think of no more beautiful a distraction. End. If you would like to leave feedback to the author, it's located at archiveofourown.org/works/342-4574.